Turn, if you would, to the book of Psalms. Book of Psalms. We will be in Psalm 62 through 69. I'll do a little bit in 71, probably. But I guess to get where I want to go, I want to start with this. How many people here do not know how to tie a man's tie? I want to see your hands. All right. I need you. Come here. It's pretty simple, really. I've been a teacher my whole life. This will be no problem. Okay, put it around your neck. Turn where these people, they'll need the demonstration as well. You make the big part, the fat part, you make it twice as long as the narrow part. You wrap the big part over the narrow part. Now that it's wrapped, you have two sides, one on your right ear, one on your left ear, running underneath them. You wrap the big part around the right side one time. Come on. Come on. Wrap the big one around the little one one time.
You said the right side, so I was confused.
No, wrap it on the right side. Now wrap it on the left side. It's not working real well. Did you notice that? Well, I'll be. I wonder why. The answer is, I could probably do that same nonsense to 400 people, and everybody would kind of go, no, what? I don't understand. Okay, let's slow down. Let's do it again. Okay, you make this side. By the way, Randy Wilson is the one we were laughing about.
I do trust him.
Randy Wilson is a mortician here, and he said he can only do it if people are laying down. Randy says he lays down to tie his own tie. I don't know. What you do is you put the big one over the little one, and then you wrap it around on the one side one time.
Oh.
Then you take it and you wrap it on this side, the other side, wrap it one time. And then you bring it over the entire section one time. And because we're not going to worry about tension on this, you bring it up through the middle and underneath the whole thing one time. And theoretically, we have a tie tied something like that. There you go. You may be seated. Now, why in the world would I do something goofy like a tie tying dealy whacker to start a sermon? One, because you don't have a good sermon or stalling. That may be true. It may be true, but I'll tell you, it's a sermon I want to preach. It's a sermon I want to talk about. The reason I basically do it is this. Very few things in life can we hear the instructions on and do them. That's really true. Very few things can you hear the instructions on something. I don't care even how grumpy the person giving the instructions are and they're trying to force you to do it faster. It doesn't help. You can't hear instructions and do it. What normally works for anything you're going to make substantial changes or do things in your life is, yes, you hear instructions, but probably there's a joint participation. I remember the time that when I first taught Troy, the first time that he was around a bandsaw. Now, I've got a little bitty boy. Now, he wasn't that little, but I mean, a boy that I'm ready to use on the bandsaw in my workshop. I don't mind telling you, I did not stand over in the corner and say, okay, Troy, now here's how you do it. I walked around him, and I put my hands around him, and I put my hands on top of his, and we ran the bandsaw together. My hands on top of his. And Troy learned to run a bandsaw, not off lecture, but joint participation. We're in a section where I believe the book of Psalms have changed drastically many people's prayer lives, mine as well. We're in a section where David teaches me to pray. And I want to talk to you this morning about what David teaches us about praying. And my intention is that when you walk out of here, my intention is that you have six things that you might think about, that these are the things I want to really incorporate more in my prayer life. But I'm pretty sure it won't make any real difference if I just tell you in a lecture style and get them walk out of here. I want to tell you that how you're going to learn these six things is when you see them here in the text, but you go home and jointly participate with David in his prayers. When you start praying David's prayers with him, When you will, in a sense, let David wrap his arms around you, and you will begin to let David direct you in how you speak and how you pray. And first of all, it's David's prayers you'll be working through, but it won't be long before no longer is it David's prayers. It's now your prayers. And so I want to encourage you to have some interaction in what you're doing here. David's prayers. There are six things that I think, this is more of a teaching lesson than it is a sermon this morning, but there are six things I think that you would want to glean out of this and put in your own life. What made David to be a man after God's own heart? What caused David to be the man you think of most when you think of worship, perhaps, in the entire Scripture? I think these six elements have something to do with it. And by the way, there are more than six. That's just about all the time we'll have even time to brush on this morning. The first thing I want to make an observation on is deep. Oh, it's deep. Oh, profound. Profound. What did David do to make his prayers something that seemed to leap off the page? And the first thing is, he wrote them down. Hey, really? I started there. When I took a look at David's prayers and thought, what do I have to learn out of them? The first thing I'm going, I'm reading his prayers. Well, what's the purpose? Why did he write them down? Did he write them down strictly as a teaching purpose for other people? And the more I read his prayers, the more I went over them, the more I realized that he didn't just write them for our teaching, but he appears as if the very writing of themselves were part of his worship and his prayer time. And I have copies of them. I believe that at least a portion of my prayers need to be more than just thinking my prayers. There'll be a great portion of my prayers that's thinking, but there'll be another portion of my prayers that's beyond just thinking. It is where my speaking out loud or my hand becomes involved in my prayer. David's prayer life incorporated more of him than just standing on the sidelines thinking about them. In the last week or so, I have talked to four men who have all said the same thing in different ways, but all four said the same thing. One man is getting up early in the morning and going to work long before work time. He has taken a particular rug and folded it a couple of times there beside his computer table. And he gets on his knees on that rug. He puts his scripture up on the computer screen. But he said, here's what really has changed. He said, I have begun to pray my prayers out loud. He said, praying my prayers out loud over the last three and a half months, he said, have so radically changed me. He said, I cannot tell you the impact. He said, there is something about my own voice being heard by my own ears. He said, the first time I started praying out loud, I'm going to tell you, I couldn't do it very long because tears were coursing down my cheeks, tears of gratitude. And then later on, tears of things that I just never would have wept before the Lord about, but they're brokenhearted things now. He said, praying out loud somehow used more of me. There's another man who said, I go to the back of my house. He said, I go to a spare bedroom. And he said, I have set up a chair. Sometimes I sit there, sometimes I kneel there, sometimes I stand and hold my hands up. But he said, when I began to pray my prayers out loud, it was suddenly as if I moved in my relationship with God and began to speak as one friend to another. Another man said, I do everything at the computer. He said, I write my correspondence to my family on the computer. He said, I finally began in the last 6 months, I write my prayers on my computer. And he said, as I type my prayers, I have found that something has occurred drastically in my thinking. And he said, my world changed when I began to express more of my heart and my own life, not just in thinking my prayers, but going another step further. Another individual said, I take my pen and I journal. I always knew that people who journaled seemed to have something that I didn't have. And when I began to write my prayers. Turn, if you would, to Psalm 63. In Psalm 63, verse 6, David writes, on my bed I remember you. I think of you through the watches of the night. Okay, there's no doubt that David has a great deal of his praying that would be what we would call thinking. That when you wake up in the middle of the night, and many of us have done that, that if you wake up in the middle of the night, it's not a bad reminder. It's not a, this is a good time for me to voice my prayers. I probably have done as much praying for my children in the night when I woke up as any other time during the daylight. David would seem to do his thinking praying there. But I want you to notice verse 7. Because you are my help, I sing in the shadows of your wings. Is that word sing, is that only poetic? Is that simply a metaphor for something? I don't know. Look at Psalm 66, verse 8. In Psalm 66, verse 8, he says, "Praise our God, O people. Let the sound of his praise be heard." Look at verse 66, or chapter 66, verse 17. "I cried out to him with my mouth, and his praise was on my tongue." I believe that one of the key things that I just observed and I begin to practice it even more in my life has changed what I do. I've always said, for me, that praying out loud at least a portion of the time was extremely important in my prayer life. I will not have an effective prayer life if I don't pray out loud at least some. But by doing this over the last 2 or 3 or 4 weeks in the book of Psalms and trying to be more intentional about it, I've written more prayers than I have, and I'm praying more often out loud than I had been. And I will tell you, there's something that David has that he's doing here that's worthwhile. I want to make an observation. It's kind of a sideline. But part of how God made us is we're holistic people. Can't compartmentalize us. We're holistic. And one of the things that I need is my own ears needs to hear my own tongue saying what's true. When my ears hear my own tongue saying it, there are those of you in a worship service collectively would be like I am. On occasions, I like to just listen, and I'm impacted by those around me and their singing. And I find myself going, God, they have it exactly right. This is exactly right. And there's a sweetness of listening. But I'm going to tell you this. Those who even come to a corporate prayer time, which is ultimately what worship still is, and you do not let your own voice participate, you are cutting out your own sense of intimacy with God. And you can use singing as your excuse and say, well, I don't sing. I'm not a singer. This ain't about singing, gang. This is not about singing. It's about the human heart's need to express itself to the living God. And there is something powerful in singing the scripture. There's something about hearing your own voice. And if you hear an off-key voice more than you hear the truth about God, you've heard the wrong thing. My own voice needs to express it. David has at least some sense of involving more of himself in his own prayer life. Just a simple first observation. Second thing I would make, Psalm 62, verse 8. In Psalm 62, verse 8, he says in the middle of the verse, "Pour out your hearts to him, for God is our refuge." I like that concept of pour out your hearts. I think it's pretty important that we even spend a little time there. In Psalm 69, I want you to notice how he does that. In Psalm 69, David will say things in his prayers like, "I am worn out calling for help. My throat is parched. My eyes fail looking for my God." Now, I don't know about you, but man, that sounds to me like a guy who's desperate and pouring out his heart. God, where are you? God, why has this prayer not been answered? God, why am I my eyes exhausted from looking over the hill waiting for you to come and rescue? Why has this not happened yet? This is a man pouring his heart out. In verses 13 through 17, "But I pray to you, Lord, in the time of your favor and your great love, O God, answer me with a sure salvation. Rescue me from the mire. Do not let me sink. Deliver me from those who hate me." There's a passion in his prayers. I guess I need to remind you, for my sake at least, you may not need reminded, but at least I need to remind you, that praying is not some staid academic exercise. Praying is not a religious ritual. It's not some formal template you follow. It's not some cookie cutter you pull out and say, okay, bop, 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 all the biscuits turn out the same. Prayer is literally genuine, heartfelt, pouring your heart out before God. I thought about people who'd done this. I've been doing my devotions in 1 Samuel and Hannah. I love that passage about Hannah in 1 Samuel chapter 1. She's a woman without any children, and the story takes place. She goes in to worship, and when she goes in to worship, it says that she was brokenhearted. Here's the text, Hannah pouring her heart out. It said, in bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. Now, as she was doing it, it was so passionate what she was doing that the priest thought she was drunk. The priest standing off to the side, why would he think she was drunk? Because the text says, because she was praying in her heart and her lips were moving, but her voice was not heard. He goes and rebuke her and say, woman, if you're going to do your drinking, do it somewhere else. I don't know where she's supposed to do her drinking, but don't do it here. And she replies back, no, it is not that I have been drinking, but I have been praying in my great anguish and grief. That's a biblical prayer, gang. That's a sense of pouring your heart out. Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. The text talks about his sorrowful and troubled life at that time and pouring it out. David does. When I went through the Psalms, I recognized that many times our prayers must bore God to death. You learned a certain set of words somewhere when you were a kid. You kind of learned to cover the bases. You see, you hit A, B, C, D, and E, got them hit. Or maybe it's the C's, the outline you learned, or whatever it is. And you just sort of, I'll bet you God at times must want to yawn. And the reason being is not because we're so insignificant, but because I haven't heard your heart in so long. What I've heard is the rituals, the motions you go through, the automatics, but give me your heart. Sometimes that heart would be simply this, God, I wished I felt more grateful today. And God, I come into your presence and I know I'm coming into your presence unprepared and I don't feel as grateful as I ought to be. God, why is that the case in my life? Why, God, do I not have a greater sense of gratitude? Sometimes it would be coming into God's presence ticked and frustrated. God, it doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem fair. Why is it that the wicked seem to flourish? Sometimes it's, God, is there no justice? Sometimes it's gratitude. I want you to notice Psalm 62 and Psalm 69. I want you to notice the contrast. In Psalm 62, David pours his heart out, especially verses 11 or 12 are where he speaks to God. But Psalm 62 is a passage where David prays with great confidence. David would be having an up day, if you want to call it that. It is unshakable confidence. I have problems, but what are problems to me? God, you're above all. I'm not bothered by problems. Send on all the problems you want. I'm confident in you. Read Psalm 69. Psalm 69, David is fearful and unsteady and desperate and brokenhearted, and the problems feel like they're overwhelming him. Now, I want you to notice the core prayer has to do with pouring his heart out with integrity and honesty, but in both passages, you have models for how we ought to pray. There's no addendum at the end of Psalm 69 that says, oh, you guys, don't pray when you're on your bad days because you're just such downers to me. Psalm 69, where he's brokenhearted and fearful, is still a biblical prayer we're given as a model. Pouring your heart out before God. It seems odd to say this, but there's a place to be honest with God. Isn't that a pretty weird thing to say? Be honest with God. A great deal of my praying is oftentimes, Lord, I realize that today my temptation is to duck the real issues I ought to talk to you about. Today, Lord, I realize it's not because I just want to duck from you with those. I don't want to think about them myself. Lord, I'm playing a game of escapism with me. And I guess I'm doing the same with you. Just integrity of prayers. David pours his heart out. being transparent before God. I believe that people who learn to pray with transparency and honesty will have more emotion, both joyful and brokenhearted. And I think those are biblical. Now, I want to give one balancing portion of this. I want to temper what I just said to you with one thing. I believe in your own privacy and in your own home, there'll be great expression to those emotions. But I want to remind you that there will be some control and balance on that when we're in corporate worship. Paul wrote to the Corinthians, and he wrote to the Corinthian church and said, you know, your selfishness is hurting people around you. He wrote to the Corinthians and he said, you know, what you're doing in corporate worship is hurting one another. He wrote to the Corinthians and Paul said, you have lost this sense of what it means to be together. You've lost this togetherness. In corporate worship, there may be times you are exactly like Hannah. Times that you are brokenhearted and grieving and your lips will move, but your voice may not be heard. There'll be times in corporate worship that you are coming in as Psalm 62. You are joyful and celebration, and you are absolutely ecstatic about the goodness of the Lord that you sense and feel. There's days you'll come in to worship your Psalm 69 where you are fearful and scared and hurting. And there'll be days that the two people, one Psalm 62 and one Psalm 69, are sitting side by side. And we are in a worship service. Every now and then we preachers do stupid stuff and worship leaders do stupid stuff. And what that is we want everybody to get up and celebrate and everybody you do this and everybody. Well, this morning at the 8 o'clock service, we had the woman who just found out that the baby she's carrying has died inside of her. It's a Psalm 69 day. Sitting beside her, just a little ways over, was the family that just had the wedding. And the sense of everything being pulled together in their life is so joyful. While our prayers are be passionate and heartfelt and genuine, Psalm 62 and Psalm 69 people need to be able to come to a common worship service and take good care of each other in the middle of it. David has both. David has both. I want to be an individual who expresses more of me in my prayers. My writing, my speaking will do that. I want to be an individual who pours my heart out before God. It's a third observation, and that is always pray what you know. Always pray what you know. What do I mean by that? Let me take you around the barn. I don't know when it happened, but somewhere in my childhood, it was a dark night somewhere, and my dad pointed out three stars that are in the Big Bear that are very, very bright, and one star that's very small. And those three stars have become, in many ways, my security blanket always at night. Almost a sense of things I've thought about. God, you hung them there, and they haven't moved. God, you told them to stay, and they've stayed. I get disoriented at night if I'm out somewhere and I can look and find the stars and I know exactly which way east and west and north and south is. Those stars are something that are my foundation. I remember sensory overload many places in the world. You just get sensory overload. There was an Akka village in pretty remote Thailand that I spent the night in, and with no English translator around to speak of at all that you could really count on. And I remember sensory overload. That was the night I did the funeral for a baby that had just died, and I'm doing it with a translator that knows maybe 50 words of English. And I mean, it was just a lot of things going on that night. And I remember that night, the calming influence in my own prayer time was just looking at a darkened sky and pulling out three or four stars, the same stars I see in my bedroom when I was a kid, the same stars that I raised my family under, the same God who hung those stars. It may sound like a little bit of a goofy thing to tell you, but ultimately, I sort of get my orientation back a little bit. I remember walking through the Kabul, Afghanistan, on a darkened night, sensory overload. It's a war-torn town, sensory overload. But everything's right with the world because God's still on his throne and those three or four stars still hang there. I know exactly which they are. I even know which direction I'm walking. I didn't know where I didn't know if I was walking east or north or south until I saw those stars, and now I know exactly which way I'm walking in Kabul. There are many things I don't know. I see Kirby and Rebecca here. I don't know whether KS will ever have any problems with the government and get locked up, whether his wife and children, I don't know whether that will happen. I don't know whether cancer will claim Alan's life, Alan Stevens' life. I don't know whether or not this certain gal who needs to do something right with her children, and she's not right with the Lord. I don't know whether she will or won't. There's many things I don't know. And in my prayer time, I have to go before the Lord on things I don't know, and I pour my heart out before the Lord on God on things I don't know, things I want to see happen. But I'll tell you the one thing in prayers that I have to do is I have to pray what I do know. I pray what I don't know, yes, but I have to pray what I do know. And what I do know are things like, look at the end of Psalm 62. There are so many things we could talk about, but the end of Psalm 62. Psalm 62 says, verse 11, "One thing God has spoken, two things I have heard, that you, O God, are strong, and that you, O God, are loving." Man, there are tons of things I don't know, but I'll tell you this, God, I know you're able, and God, I know you care. God, I know you're powerful, and God, I know you're kind. God, I know nothing is an obstacle to you, and God, I know you're merciful. Now, I don't know about anything else, but praying what I do know is like finding the stars in the sky and everything becomes oriented for me. It's like finding in the water the rock to stand on. Praying what you know is a key part of the Christian life. It's the reason David will pray back history. I know you've done these things, God, and I need to tell you again that I know. I know. Sometimes David will pray back just the character of God. God, I know. I love Psalm 66. Look at verse 16. Come and listen, all of you who fear God. Let me tell you what he's done for me. That's praying what you know. Katie has this as a big stencil on the wall in her dining room. In all fairness, her mother probably did a key part in that. But Kate picked out the verse, and the verse as she hangs, and you walk into her house, it's great big letters, white letters on a red wall, if I remember right. I can't exactly, but... Come, those of you who fear the Lord. Let me tell you what the Lord is, because it's a symbol of when we sit around the kitchen table, that's what our conversation needs to be. Let me tell you what God has done for me. Ultimately, that's still our prayer life too. Pray what you know. Pray what you know. I believe it's fair enough in pouring your heart out before God to say, God, I'm so confused on these three things. But God, I'm not confused about this. Those two lines have sustained me regularly. This I know. God, you're able. And God, you're good. Now, whether KS will ever get arrested or not, I don't know. Whether or not we'll ever have, I don't know. I will ask of you, Lord, but I don't know. I may pray for Stephen and an angel, or pray for Peter and an angel releases him. I may pray for Stephen and the rocks release him to heaven. I don't know. But these things I do know. It sort of orients everything. There's a fourth thing I know. I know that David prayed with humility. You're going to find that in most every passage. Look at Psalm 62, verse 9. I think it's interesting he even puts this in the middle. Psalm 62, verse 9. Low-born men are but a breath, and the high-born are but a lie. If weighed on a balance, they are nothing. Together, they're only breath. Well, what's he mean by that? What he means is, God, I know who I am. I am a frail creature. I am a creature who can have no sense of self-importance. I am the moon, God. I'll never be the sun. You're the sun. My orbit will always have to be around you. Your orbit will never be around me. I'll never be the sun. I'll be the moon. And God, you're the one I kneel before. Pray in humility. You're going to find that regularly. I would say to you, pour your heart out before God. I would say to you, be more expressive in how you pray, whether it be writing it down or whether it be verbalizing it. I would tell you, pray what you know. Pray back to God the good things He has done for you and the things in His character. Pray with expressing humility. Praise with confession. He prays with confession. You're going to find that regularly. Look at Psalm 69. Again, we could look at Psalm 65. It has the same thing. I'm just going through a handful of Psalms here, just four or five, noticing patterns that he has regularly. In Psalm 69, he says, verse 5, "You know my folly, O God. My guilt is not hidden from you." There's no other way to read that, but he is dealing with the issues of, these are the things I know. Being pretty transparent with my life. You may not want me to be, but I had to, my wife came in this last week, and I said, "Sweetheart, I owe you an apology." Boy, that was yesterday. I was just grumpy, and I'm moody. I don't know why it was, but it wasn't right, and I'm sorry. Now, you need to know that I didn't automatically plan a conversation with my wife confessing that I've been moody, and I apologized. What had happened was, in my prayer time, going through what David's doing, I noticed his time of confession, and if I'm having a conversation with God, well, at least I'd let Julian on it sometimes. And so it comes out of my prayer time. If I don't confess my fault to you, you can be pretty sure I'm not confessing it to God. I have to start with Him anyhow. Just confession. You're going to notice something else, and I love this. He prays his commitment. Look at Psalm 71. Now, this is in all kinds of places. Look at verse 14. "But as for me, I will always have hope. I will praise you more and more. My mouth will tell of your righteousness, of your salvation all day long, though I know not its measure." I mean, I'll talk about your salvation to the Lord, but I don't even understand the whole scope of it. Verse 16, "I will come and proclaim your mighty acts, O sovereign Lord. I'll proclaim your righteousness and yours alone. Since my youth, O God, you have taught me, and to this day I declare your marvelous deeds. Even when I am old and gray, do not let me forsake, O God. Do not forsake me, O God, till I declare your power to the next generation, your might to all who are to come." One of the things that I think your prayer life has to have as a regular part of it is your own way of saying it. "As for me and my house will serve the Lord. Though he slay me, yet will I serve him. I am thine, O Lord. I have heard your voice, and I give myself entirely to you. Lord, is there any part of me that I've withheld because I don't want to hold a bit of it back? I want to belong to you." There is something about committing in your prayer life, "God, I know who I am. Yes, I'm pouring my heart out because I don't know what's going to happen with whatever it might be. But God, you will hear from me every time I pray to you. I'm yours. I think there's just some things in David's prayer life that change all of ours. But I don't think you get those till you start doing them with him. You start participating, to start tying the tie with him. Use his prompting to make it part of your prayer life. Let me just finish with these last things. I want you to notice, I don't think there's any magic words. I don't think there's any abracadabra. I don't think there's a certain set of Bible words. If God hears these right Bible words, suddenly heaven all swings open. And if you don't use the right Bible words, oh, good grief, no. There's no magic formula. I want you to notice, and I know this takes more time than just a simple statement, but there's no claim it, name it, claim it nonsense. Every now and then there's somebody who says, you know, if you cannot pronounce what God's going to do and you can't pronounce it in your prayer life, you don't have faith. No. No. That's a false spiritual bravado, gang. The power is not in my proclamation. The power is in my humbly coming before God and saying, God, I know you're able. And God, I know you're good. And God, I ask for this. And I believe it's your will. And Lord, I ask for this with confidence. But Lord, I'm yours no matter what you do. I'm yours no matter what you do. There's no particular emotions that seem more faithful. If you laugh or cry, Psalm 62 or Psalm 69, they both seem to be acceptable to the Lord. Go home this week. Let David coach you. Spend some time in David's prayers. You throw my list of six things away. You find your own. And you come back in 2 weeks from now and you say, you know what? My prayer life has changed. David taught me to pray in ways I never would have dreamed. Randy, I'm glad you got your six, but those weren't even the most important six. Here are the most important six. These are the ones I found. They changed my life. This morning, the last thing I want to say is this. I want you to make a commitment to pray. I want our houses to sound funny this week. The scratch of ink pens writing. The sound of voices of men and women in the back guest room praying out loud. I want you to look like Hannah driving across town. Your lips were moving, but no sound was coming. You look like you were drunk. I want you to commit to pray. This morning, don't pass up a perfectly good time to say yes to Jesus. Would you stand as we sing?